Okay, good evening. There should be, yes. Thank you. Okay, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. There are still more seats up here, if anyone needs, or more seats over here on the side. Plenty of seats, just not in the most convenient of areas. My apologies. So, welcome. It's been a little while since we've had our Wednesday night cheer, and it's an incredible zechus to be able to focus a little bit tonight on Megillas Esther. I spoke about this morning in our witch cheer regarding the power of Chodesh Adar. So tonight we're going to be a little bit more focused on the Megillah. I want to begin by thanking the families who dedicated this evening's cheer, to thank the Lerner Mishpacha, who are Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Adar, for dedicating the Shiurim and Drashos this month in memory of Mrs. Dina Lerner Gerber, Dina Bas Yehuda Leib, whose first Yahrzeit is being observed in this month. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the her neshama will have an aliyah, and the family a nechama. To thank Paul and Kathy Pollock for dedicating the learning this week in memory of Paul's grandparents, Zechariah ben Avram and Dina Bas Pesach. To thank Jack Bennett for dedicating the learning this week in memory of Erez Gerstein, who was a commander of the IDF's Lebanon liaison unit, who was killed by Hezbollah in 1999. And we thank the sponsors of tonight's shir, Maya Anita Gerstein and family, for dedicating the shir this morning, this evening, in memory of Nita's mother, Gladys Eskenazi. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, Hashem will have an aliyah and the family's a nechama. And with that, let us begin. So I want to draw your attention to something really quite fascinating. In general, you know, part of the difficulty of Purim, Purim is such a frenetic day. There is so much activity, so much going on, and sometimes it all goes by so incredibly quickly. I'm not necessarily advocating for a second day of Purim. I think that might go over much better with the men than with the women. But it is so much to accomplish in the course of one short day. There are an incredible number of mitzvos that we have to perform. But in addition to that, even just ingesting the messages of the Megillah. You know, we read the Megillah, if you think about it, we read the Megillah not at the most convenient of times. Right? We read the Megillah we'll read it in Miras Hashem, come Monday night, Tanis Esther. So most of us are not operating at peak performance. At the end of the fast, we're eager to get home. Then, of course, again, early Monday morning, or Tuesday morning, Purim morning itself, sometimes we're running all over the place. And a lot of times, we take in the story. It's a story that we're familiar with, but we miss out on many of the incredible and profound nuances. So I want to draw your attention to one of those this evening. So if you take a look at number one on your sheets, hopefully there are still enough sheets around. I think there are a couple more on the back table over here. So quoting over here, I need the seats up here. So the Megillah says as follows. The Megillah writes, "Vatitav ha'na'ara be'enov." So remember again, just to give you a bit of context. So Achashverosh goes ahead and executes Vashti after the entire debacle at the party. And again, Achashverosh's advisors come up with an incredible plan, launch a beauty pageant, gather up all of the women. Again, as Chazal teach us, married women, unmarried women. Achashverosh was an exceptionally immoral and depraved individual. Gather up all of the women, and you'll choose queen number two. So again, we know the story that out of all of the women who are assembled, for some strange reason, Esther is picked. Vatitav ha-na'ara be'inav, the young girl, the maiden, found favor in his eyes. Vatisa chesed lefanav, and ultimately she won his favor. Vayivahelas tamrukev, asmanoselos, esla, vesharanos, and Achashverosh gives her anything he wants. Meaning, all of the resources of the kingdom are at her disposal. Whatever it is that she wants is at her disposal. I also just want to take an opportunity to thank Esther Resnick, who is our sign language interpreter. It's an incredible privilege that our shul has to partner with the deaf community in making sure that Torah is accessible to everyone. Torah belongs to every single Jew, no matter what, no matter how they operate or no matter how they interact. And it is so beautiful. And I have to thank Esther because she is at the forefront of all of this. Just, you know, in the deaf community, it's this, right? It's not, right, correct. It's not a clap. But again, But it's really an incredible zechus we have on Purim. Also, we have a PowerPoint Megillah reading. So I just want to take the opportunity to welcome all of our brothers and sisters from the deaf community who are here joining us. A pleasure to have you. So the Megillah goes on. And the Megillah says something amazing. So I'm still in source number one, Pasuk Yud, verse 10. So the Pasuk says, Lo higida Esther es ama ve es moladita. Esther does not reveal her nation, literally her people, her am, her nation, the esmo ladata, and ultimately again where she is born. Ki Mordechai tziva ala asher lo sagid, because Mordechai commanded her ultimately that she should not divulge this information. And every single day Mordechai walks by the courtyard, by the harem, where all of the women are being housed, ladas es shalom Esther umaye aseba, in order to go ahead and see what's happening with Esther, how is she doing, what is it that is occurring with her, and what's unfolding. So amazingly enough, what I'd like to try to focus on tonight a little bit is this fascinating idea that Mordechai commands Esther not to divulge her identity, not to divulge her nation, not to divulge her birthplace. And the question is, why? What is it exactly that Mordechai was trying to accomplish by having Esther hold back this information? Meaning, at some point in time, there's one thing we know for sure, which is what? That the information is going to come out, right? People are going to find out who she is. And we know by the end of the story, everyone knows who Esther is. But yet Mordechai made a concerted effort to instruct Esther not to divulge her nation, not to divulge her birthplace. And again, the Megillah also tells us, perhaps Esther on her own accord, on her own volition, would have revealed this information. But Mordechai tells her not to, and therefore she doesn't. So the question we're going to try to ponder this evening is why? Why exactly did Mordechai instruct Esther in this particular fashion? What was Mordechai's motivation? And why did Esther so quickly comply? So what's amazing to see is the commentaries here on this particular question, almost all the commentaries deal with it, and they literally go in a million different directions. And it's dramatic to see. If you take a look at number two, so Rashi says, Asher lo sagid, kidei shiyom rashi mi mishpacha bazuya, v'yishalchua, she'im yedu shi mi mishpachas sha'ul hamelech, hayu machzikim ba. So Rashi is very simple. Mordechai wants Esther dismissed from the pageant. He wants her dismissed from the pageant. So he assumes the best way to get her dismissed from the pageant is, you see, generally, if somebody doesn't want to reveal their yichus, right? Somebody doesn't want to tell you about their family. What does that generally tell you? That there's something to hide, right? Or there's something they're embarrassed about. So Mordechai's plan is a very simple one. Esther, don't tell them anything about yourself. And they will just automatically assume that you are from Mishpacha Bezuya. You don't have yichus, you don't have any kind of backgrounds. And so they're going to send you home. And interestingly enough, we know it was just the opposite. Esther Hamalka was actually royalty. She was a descendant of King Saul. Saul was the first king of Israel. But again, Mordechai was careful not to divulge any of this information, that ultimately she should just be dismissed. The Rid in number three says the same idea. Mipnei she'Esther nolda miyachas gadol, v'hai saguna lemalchus. Mipnei zet tziva laMordechai shelo sagid, kedesh lo tinasi le v'titam ben agayim. So Mordechai said to Esther, your best chance for getting out of this pageant, being dismissed from the harem, is anonymity. If you preserve your anonymity, the conclusion that they'll come up with is, she's a street urchin, she's a no one, she has no yichus, and therefore she is not fit to be the queen. She's not fit. The Malbim says, same idea. Number four. Esther won't tell anyone who her parents are. She won't tell anyone who her mishpacha is. So the logical conclusion that you would expect is, okay, it must have been, maybe she was abandoned in the marketplace. She doesn't know who her parents are. She doesn't know who her mishpacha is. And it's so not befitting for the king to marry a woman like this. So Mordechai instructs young, naive Esther, don't divulge any information. They will think you are a no one. And if you're a no one, the king is not going to want to marry you. The king wants yichus. The king wants yichus. I'll tell you the irony of this. The irony of this is Mordechai was dead wrong. Why was Mordechai dead wrong? So this is not our topic for tonight. But one of the fascinating dynamics in the Megillah is the dynamic between Vashti and Ahasuerus. Vashti and Ahasuerus. And it's a very strange dynamic between the two of them. Neither are such great people. But that whole episode of the Megillah that appears in the beginning of the Megillah, that strange episode where he's having his party for the men, she's having her party for the women. Right? Even by the Gentiles, they have separate seating. Right? They have their own parties. They have their own parties. And then Ahasuerus sends for Vashti. Vashti refuses to come to the party. So the Gemara adds in a narrative that Ahasuerus wanted Vashti to appear unclothed. He wanted to show off his queen. She was very beautiful. And she refused. But the truth is, there's even a simpler understanding. The Malbim points out that according to all opinions, Ahasuerus was not royalty. He was not royalty. The only discussion point is, how common was he? So the Gemara records a number of different opinions. Some say that he was a stable boy who just had dumb luck and somehow rose to the position of prominence of the king. Others say he was a soldier and rose through the ranks. But one thing is clear, is he was not royalty. The tension between Ahasuerus and Vashti in the beginning of the Megillah is as such. Vashti was royalty. Vashti had royal blood coursing through her veins. She was the granddaughter of none other than Nebuchadnezzar, the conqueror of Jerusalem, the conqueror of the Jewish people. The tension between Ahasuerus and Vashti was a power struggle. Ahasuerus summons his queen to appear before him because he's making a national statement. I am the king, as they say in Hebrew, Ani Agever, right? I'm the man. I'm the man, right? She's only queen because she's married to me. So he wants to assert his dominance over her by calling her before him. Meanwhile, she refuses. Why does she refuse? She says, I mean, it's not a direct quote, you schnook. Who are you? Right? Who are you? You are a nothing. You are nothing. You're a stable boy. You're a ruffian. You're just a soldier in the trenches. You're not royalty. Somehow you got into this. I don't know why. But at the end of the day, I am the queen. You are the king. That's why, amazingly enough, whenever Ahasuerus refers to Vashti, he always calls her Vashti Hamalka. And whenever Vashti responds, it's always Hamalka Vashti. He tries to tell her, you are Vashti. And you're only queen because you're married to me. She says, no, let's get this clear. I am the queen because I am the queen. I am the queen because I am the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar. I am the queen because I have royalty coursing through my veins. There are seats right up here if you need. So I have royalty coursing right through my veins. So what's amazing over here is so fascinating. Mordechai tells Esther not to reveal her identity because he assumes that anonymity, familial anonymity, will be a turnoff for Ahasuerus. But ironically enough, it's just what he was looking for. He could not be happier than to find a beautiful woman who has no yichus. Because if you have no yichus, then what? Then what? Then you are by definition subservient to me. So the great irony. There's a lot of irony in the Megillah, which goes to this theme of HaKadosh Baruch Hu pulling the strings. So much of the Megillah is this motif of man planning and thinking that things are going in one direction, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu reminding us, tapping us on the shoulder and saying, oh, by the way, actually, that's not the case. Actually, your life is going to go in a different direction. So all of these commentaries, Mordechai is telling Esther, just be anonymous, be anonymous, be anonymous. That's the best chance you have not to be picked as queen. And meanwhile, again, it's exactly the quality that Ahasuerus was looking for. Another approach. Take a look at number 5. The Rabbeinu Bechaya writes as follows. He says, Lo Yigida Esther es amaves molarata. So Mordechai tells Esther, remain anonymous. Don't tell anybody about your family, about your upbringing, about your nation. Why? Kedesha tishmar toras Hashem yisbarach b'seser. At the end of the day, this way Esther could keep her religious beliefs quietly and in secret. Shilotochal nadelos. So I'll tell you what, the Rabbeinu Bechaya is saying something amazing. You ever have a situation where, let's say, again, sometimes it happens in the business world, or sometimes it just happens in any time that you're with people of different cultures. And sometimes, as Jews, you know, if I have to order the kosher meal, especially again if my kosher meal comes quadruple wrapped, right, and I'm schwitzing trying to open up the tin foil and nothing's working, and why do they put so much tape on this, right, and you know, sometimes, and especially if you interact with certain people, they try to convince you that the laws of kashrus are archaic, are outdated. But tell someone that you're a vegetarian. Oh, wow, vegetarian. Vegan? Oh my gosh, you might as well be riding on a white donkey. We're ready to crown you as Mashiach, right? So it's an interesting thing. Sometimes when you have dietary restrictions because you're religious, so people will try to convince you otherwise. But if you have dietary restrictions because you're sensitive to animals or whatever else, then suddenly that's godless, that's beautiful. Mordechai was a very smart man. He said, Esther, we don't know how long or what's going to happen over here. But one thing is clear, which is you need to be able to keep kosher while you're in the palace. The best way for you to ensure that you could keep kosher is don't tell anyone you're Jewish. Just tell them you don't eat meat. Or just tell them that these are your dietary needs. Tell them you have a sensitive stomach. Tell them whatever you have to tell them, just don't tell them you're Jewish. If you don't tell them that you're Jewish, they'll be happy to accommodate your meal choices in whatever way you want. Tell them that you're Jewish, and you will encounter incredible resistance. So according to this approach of the Rabbeinu Bechaye, Mordechai already sees that this is going to be a long haul. This is going to be an overwhelming endeavor. So we have to make the right decisions for the journey ahead. We don't know how long you're going to be here for, but one thing is clear, which is you have to maintain allegiance and fidelity to your Judaic values. And ironically enough, sometimes the way to do that is not to broadcast your identity. Sometimes the way to maintain fidelity and allegiance to your values is to keep your identity underneath the radar. Comes along Rabbi Elazar Cohen Tzedek in number 6. So, by the way, if you've never heard of some of these commentaries, either did I. I just happened to purchase a very beautiful Megillah that has obscure commentaries. So I enjoy it a lot. So in number 6, so this is incredible. So Rabbi Elazar Cohen Tzedek says the following. Mordechai Yosef B'Shar HaMelech. So interestingly enough, he's bothered by the juxtaposition. Remember, again, there are two things that are happening over here. Number one, Mordechai is telling Esther, don't divulge your identity. Number two, U'b'chol yom v'yom, every single day, Mordechai comes and checks in on Esther. Why is that strange? Because it attracts attention. Meaning, if you're telling Esther, don't go ahead and divulge your identity, don't tell anyone who you are, and Mordechai's showing up every single day in the harem, and he's not inquiring about anyone else other than Esther, doesn't that raise suspicion? So right, Rabbi Elazar Cohen Tzedek, something amazing. He says, V'yesh lomar, get ready for this. This is wild. Third line down in number 6. V'yesh lomar, Yashav Mordechai Mitzapa, Masai Shehaya Yachal Lignov Es Esther, Leholicha Lemalchus Acheres. Mordechai has a very bad feeling that Esther is going to be chosen. And so he realizes the only way out of this is to kidnap Esther. To kidnap Esther. He has to find his... Right? Who ever knew that the Megillah was filled with such intrigue? Right? So Mordechai has to kidnap Esther in order to get her out. And again, what does it mean, get her out? Take her where? Somewhere very far away. Because remember, again, the monarchy of Ahasuerus spanned for 127 countries. It was a huge empire. So get her out means get her somewhere outside of the reach of Ahasuerus. Somewhere very far away. So why does he want to do this? Ki haisa ishto. Because Esther was Mordechai's wife. You know, I spoke about this morning, that the Megillah has an incredible, tragic underpinning. The Megillah is not a joyous story. The salvation of the Jews is a joyous story. The idea that although we were about to be decimated, we were saved is a joyous story. But as I mentioned this morning, I apologize for those who were there, get a little chazara, you know, everybody is happy in the Megillah story except who? Except Esther and Mordechai. The hero and the heroine of the story are very broken. They're very tzibrachen by the end of the story. It's beautiful. They have the ability, of course, to be agents of God and the salvation of the Jewish people. But Esther is forever married to a man who she did not want to be married to. And Mordechai has to work in a palace where every single day he sees his beloved wife married to a man who's not him. So therefore, says Rabbi Elazar Cohen Tzedek, something amazing. Mordechai realizes that Esther's not getting out of this. So what does he decide to do? I'm going to keep an eye on her. And the moment's going to come where I'm going to be able to kidnap her, and we're going to run away together and start our life over somewhere else, somewhere outside of the reach of Achashverosh. It's an incredible insight, so why, according to this approach, so why does Mordechai tell Esther not to go ahead and divulge her identity? He goes on, he says, V'achashverosh al yosim alibo shi yehudiya, avalim haysa magedes ama umolarta, az lo haya takana. So listen to this, the concern was, if Mordechai could pull off this plan, and kidnap a kid, we'll call it better to say it as rescue, right? Rescue Esther and get her out of the empire. What's going to happen? What is Achashverosh going to do? Right? One thing about Achashverosh is he's not really a vacheron, right? He's not really a very yielding and forgiving guy. He doesn't really know how to be mevater, as we saw what happened with him and his first wife. Right? So what's going to happen? What is Mordechai afraid of? If Achashverosh knows that you're Jewish and I'm able to kidnap you and get you out, what's going to happen? He's going to exact retribution upon the Jewish people. So Esther, here's the plan. I'm going to get you out of this. But I need you to be tight-lipped about who you are. Because this way, if it works, and I'm able to get you out, we have not put our nation, our people, in peril. And if you see this, by the way, so much of the Megillah is seeing the story through the eyes of people. You know, so many times when we know our stories in Tanakh, we know the stories, but we fail to see them kind of through the lens of just individual humanity. Do you understand what's happening here? According to Rabbi Elazar Cohen Tzedek, there's a husband who just wants to save his wife. And he reassures her, I promise you, the day is going to come, I'll get you out of this. And the great tragedy was, he couldn't. He could not. Is there a greater pain in life than not being able to take care of your loved ones? Right? What does every single person want to do? Every father, every mother, every husband, every wife, every child to parents. Everybody wants to take care of their loved ones. And in those moments when you can't take care of your loved ones, you can't shield them from harm or from hurt, it's overwhelmingly tragic and overwhelmingly difficult. And so Mordechai says to his, can you imagine, as she's being taken to the palace, she's a young girl, a young, naive Jewish girl being taken to this place, this den of immorality, and he says to her, hold tight, I'm going to get you out of this. I promise, I'll get you out of this. Every single day, Mordechai comes to visit Esther. Ladas es shalom, Esther, for two reasons. Number one, to see how she's doing. What are we going to do? What does he mean? What are we going to do? What are we going to do means, is today the day that we could escape? So again, tells you not to say anything. This way, if they're able to pull the plan off, there's no negative ripple effects or repercussions upon the Jewish people. The Rabag, in number seven. The Rabag now goes in a totally different direction. Dramatically different direction. Writes the Rabag in number seven, Yidma, ki Mordechai ra'a shitia malka tachas vashti, ulefi sha'al yada yitachin shiagia tov Yisrael, tziva aleha asher lo sagid me'iza amhi, kedeshelo ya'azven ha'mel. So watch this, the Rabag does a 180. A 180. He says, Mordechai wanted Esther to be chosen as queen. He wanted Esther to be chosen as queen. Now, why in a million years would Mordechai ever want Esther to be chosen as queen? Why? Because he sees the writing on the wall. He sees the writing on the wall, right? It's only a matter of time until things go badly for the Jewish people. So because of that, he says, Esther, we need you in the palace. You will be able to exert influence. You'll be able, perhaps, to be able to shape policy. If you get involved, then when we need you, you will be there. So according to the Rabag, Mordechai says, there's no bigger disqualifier for being queen than what? Than being Jewish. The king's not going to... Even though, again, Achashverosh, interestingly enough, you know, doesn't seem to harbor any deep anti-Semitic sentiments, right? Achashverosh had a narcissistic personality disorder. That's what he had. And when a person suffers from a narcissistic disorder, they tend to go ahead and gravitate to whoever is going to show them the greatest amount of love and attention. So Haman was a very smart man. So he knew exactly how to play the king. Tell the king how great he is. Tell the king how wonderful he is. Give the king a little bit of money. Tell him how fantastic, how everything you're doing is not for you, is for him. And you'll have him eating out of the palm of your hand, which is exactly what Achashverosh had. Which is exactly what Haman had, excuse me. So the Rabbag said, Mordechai wants Esther to be queen. So he tells her, don't say anything about being Jewish. Because if you say something about being Jewish, you're going to get disqualified. Keep your family, keep your nation, keep your birthplace quiet, and then you will have a greater chance, ultimately, of being chosen. Take a look at number 8. The Eben Ezra. So same idea. So again, you see now this school of thought of other Mefarshim who go on it. Just so you understand, when I mentioned to you before, how the commentaries are literally across the spectrum. You had Rashi, the Rid, the Malbim, all explaining that Mordechai tells Esther, don't divulge your identity because I want you to be excluded from the pageant. I don't want you being chosen as queen. Now the Rabbag, the Eben Ezra, and others come along and say, no, Mordechai wants Esther to become queen, and therefore don't share your identity because that will lessen your chances of being chosen. Eben Ezra number 8 writes, Yesh Omrim, ki Mordechai lo asa nechona, shetziva al Esther shelo tagidama. So the Eben Ezra, see, here's what's interesting. Up until now, all the commentaries we've seen have tried to give us insight into Mordechai's actions. But no one actually tells us if Mordechai was correct or incorrect. The Eben Ezra is the first one who comes along and says, I think that what Mordechai did was incorrect. Yesh omrim ki Mordechai lo asa nechona. Mordechai did not act correctly. Shetziva al Esther shelo tagid ama. So again, some explain, so on one hand, Eben Ezra quotes the Rabbag, that Mordechai tells Esther, don't say anything about your background, because I want you to be chosen as queen. And some say that Mordechai did the wrong thing by amplifying Esther's chances of being chosen. But he goes on, he says, V'achirim amru, ki biderech nevua, o becholom yada, shetavo teshua al yad al yada li Yisrael. Others say that Mordechai possessed prophecy. And so he understood that as much as Esther tried to hide from the pageant caught up with her. And so therefore it must be, if the pageant caught up with her, it must be that what? She is a cog in the wheel of some greater divine plan. But then he goes on. I'm in number 8, the bottom right-hand paragraph. V'anochon be'enai. Here we go. Ki asa zeh Mordechai ba'avor shetishmar Torah Hashem b'seiser. So now that what the Eben Ezra does is the Eben Ezra combines a whole bunch of opinions. Right? So he says, first, Mordechai didn't do the right thing by increasing her chances. He did do the right thing because he did it through nevuah, through prophecy. And then he goes back and reverts back to the previously stated idea, which is, if you don't divulge your identity, you'll actually have an easier time observing your religious tenets. And in fact, if you look at number 9, the Medrash to Psikta Zotrasa writes, Lo egida Esther asama, afa pisha haya ma'achala mishurumi ma'achala malchus, lo evinaba. Even though Esther was eating different things than everyone else, no one picked up on this. Lo evinaba, ki hi yudis, ki Mordechai tziva ala shasher lo sagid. Because Mordechai tells her not to go ahead and divulge her identity. This way, she will not be despised by the king and has a greater chance, ultimately, again, number 1, of keeping her religious beliefs, and number 2, being chosen. So I've given you just a little bit of sampling of all the different commentaries. And you see, again, yes.
Did Haman know she was Jewish?
No. No one knows. No one knows. Only Mordechai knows. So we see over here this incredible spectrum of opinions. Literally everyone from Rashi who says that the goal was to get Esther disqualified to ultimately, again, it's part of some grand scheme of kidnapping Esther in order to run away, to the ability ultimately, again, for her to observe her religious beliefs without being challenged, to the opposite extreme of Mordechai wanting Esther to be chosen as queen because we need a Jewish woman in that position, because when things go bad, as they always do at some point in time for the Jew in diaspora, there will be someone in a position of prominence, someone in a position of power who can help steer the course of events in a proper way. But perhaps there's something else that's unfolding over here. Take a look at number 10. So the Gibarim Sechas Chulin says, Esther min HaTorah minayin. From where do we find a scriptural allusion to Esther? So remember again, of course, the story of Purim occurs long after the close of the Torah. In fact, again, remember, the story of Purim is after the Nevi'im. Right? Rabbi Soloveitchik points out that Purim is the first post-prophetic festival. Right? There's no Navi. There's no prophet when it comes to Purim. Right? There's no prophet. So there's no one. Remember, that's why the whole Purim story is so problematic. Because historically, when Jews didn't know what was going on, so what would we do? What would we do? You ask the Navi. Right? You ask the Navi. You ask the prophet. You ask the high priest. They consult the Urim V'Tumim. There are many mechanisms we have with which to consult God. Purim is the first national story, the first dramatic national story that occurs without a prophet. That's why so much of the Megillah is people kind of navigating a little bit blind, not knowing what's going on. So the Gemara says, but from where do we find the scriptural allusion to Esther? Right? Where is Esther hinted to in the Torah? To which the Gemara says, it's a pasuk, Va'anochi hastir astir as panai. So the Gemara is quoting over here the pasuk from the Tochacha, from the series of curses in the Torah, number 11. Va'anochi hastir astir panai bayomahu, akol hara asher asa ki panai elokim. So this pasuk is referring to the notion of hester panim. Hester panim means sometimes God shields his presence. He obscures his presence so that we are not able to see him. Va'anochi haster astir panai. I will hide my face from you. So this is quite interesting. So the Gemara says, so where is the scriptural allusion to Esther in the Torah? This pasuk, Va'anochi hastir astir. Now the truth is, the simple reading of the Gemara is what's the connection between Esther and Anochi hastir astir? It's the same letters, right? The name of Esther is astir. It's the same word. But Chazal are in fact trying to teach us something a little bit deeper. Take a look at number 12. The Marsha writes, "Va'amar Esther min haTorah minayin shu ikir shma, va'amar avanochi hastir astir shebiyameh niskayim mikrozeh." So the Marsha explains it's very simple. What is the Gemara saying? That in the days of the Purim story, this pasuk came to fruition. What does God tell us in Devarim? There will be times where I will shield my face from you. There will be times where I will obscure my presence. You will not be able to see me. That's what happened in the story of the Megillah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there the entire time. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was choreographing the entire story from beginning to end, but he can't be seen. He's behind the scenes. The name of God is not mentioned once throughout the entire Megillah, because the Megillah itself is a story of Hester. The Megillah itself is the story of the Jew in diaspora. It is the story of the Jew who lives under the constant shade of divine providence, but yet what? Never actually sees God. I know God is there, or God is here. I know He's with me. I know He's pulling the strings. I know that He's doing all the divine choreography, but I can't see Him. So, Esther min haTorah minayin, v'anochi hastir astir. God tells us, there will be times where I will shield my face from you. You will not see me, but I am still there. So take a look at the Sidur Shel Shabbos. So the Rebbe over here in Sidur Shel Shabbos says something so beautiful. He says, "V'zeh Esther min haTorah minayin, ma efshar lanu lilmod minei Yeshua Shel Esther b'Purim, u'mishani v'anochi hastir astir, sha'af kam b'soch mechoshech hagalos, yesh lanu Yeshua's u'pur kantadir, mustar v'tarim b'soch me'achat haba." So this is quite beautiful. So to build on the Marsha, the Sidur Shel Shabbos writes, that what is the entire essence of Megillah Esther? The entire essence of Megillah Esther is that even at times when we feel alone, even at times when we feel forsaken, even at times when the words of King David are on our lips of Keili, Keili, Lama Azavtani, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why did you forsake me? Why did you leave me? Why am I navigating through life all alone? Why don't you help me? Why don't you send me the Yeshua, the salvation, the refuah, the parnasa, why don't you send me the things that I ask for? Especially if they're legitimate requests. And the story, and sometimes when I don't get what I want, I feel so profoundly forsaken and left alone. And what does Megillah say? Isn't that the story of the Megillah? The Jews of Shushan have absolutely no idea. It's not just Shushan. The Jews of the Persian Median Empire had absolutely no idea what happened to them. What is going on over here? We're law-abiding citizens, minding our own business, and suddenly there is a decree signed by the king, Lahashmid, Larog, Ula'abed, Eskala Yehudim, to wipe out, to annihilate every single Jew. So how do you feel if you're living in the kingdom of Ahasuerus and that edict comes out? You feel alone. You feel forsaken. But how ironic is the whole story that already, even before the decree of Haman has even been signed and delivered, the Yeshua, the salvation, has already begun to sprout. Esther was the salvation. Mordechai was the salvation. And even before there was ever a decree, the salvation was already present. The salvation was already there. So the Gemara says over here, from where do we find a scriptural allusion to Esther? Va'anochi hastir astir espanai. I will shield my face from them. But the message being that even when you don't see God, He's always there. Even if you can't perceive Him, even if you don't know where He is, even if it looks like He checked out, He is always present. And with His providence is guiding the unfolding of our circumstances. But let's take it one more step. The Gemara Maseches Megillah says something amazing. The Gemara is bothered by what Esther's real name was. What was her real name? Right? Remember, interestingly enough, one thing we know is that the name Esther, take a look at number 14. Vayomines Hadassah. So remember, Karile Hadassah, Vakarile Esther. Now the Megillah itself is ambiguous because the Megillah calls Esther Esther, and it also what? Calls her Hadassah. So what's her name? Tanya B'meir Omer, Esther Shema. Her name was Esther. Esther was her given name. Hadassah was a descriptive name. So why was she called Hadassah? Al Shema Tzadikim Shenikru Hadassim. Righteous people are called Hadassim. They're called myrtle branches. Why? Because the myrtle branch has a beautiful fragrance. So the righteous emit a beautiful fragrance from their good deeds. So here the Gemara says her name was Esther. That was her given name. Her descriptive name, which was a description of her righteousness, was Hadassah. But it goes on. The Gemara gives another example. Skip down a little bit. Rabbi Nehemiah. Rabbi Nehemiah Omer. I'm in number 14, third line in, last few words on the line. Rabbi Nehemiah Omer, Hadassah Shema. Nope. Hadassah was her given name. If Hadassah was her given name, then ultimately, but now Lama Nikr Shema Esther. By the way, the Gemara says, if Hadassah was her given name, why would a parent name their child Hadassah? I mean, now it's more common because of Esther. Why name your child Hadassah? So the Gemara says, because Esther had a greenish complexion. Now, lest you think that is a slight beauty, I'll tell you what it means. It means she had like a Mediterranean look. She was olive-skinned. So because she was olive-skinned, her apparently it was a dominant feature. So her parents named her Hadassah. Gemara says, her name was Hadassah. I said, then why is she called Esther? Watch this. Shahaya umo sa'olam korin osa al shum istaher. Because ultimately, again, the nations of the world called her Esther. So amazingly enough, her given name is Hadassah. When did she acquire the name Esther? It seems to be, according to the Gemara, only after she became queen. People started calling her Esther. Esther is a play on words, or I should say it's a shortened form of the word istaher. Istaher in Aramaic dialect means the moon. And they said that Esther was as beautiful, or Hadassah was as beautiful and luminescent as the moon. So this was a name not given to her by her parents. This was a name given to her ultimately, again, by those who beheld her beauty. So this is incredible, because if you take a look at number 16, in the Sefer Torah Schaim, and I put a little bit of a biography over here, also, he says something so beautiful. So now what you have over here is like this. So two different versions, but we'll focus on the second one. Esther's given name is Hadassah. She's called Esther, ultimately, again, because they called her the moon. They called her the moon. Just like the moon is beautiful and luminescent and radiates light, so too Esther, or Hadassah, emitted this incredible beauty. Writes the Torah Chaim, number 16. He says, "Shayu akol korin osa estayer ashum sare kidi isa b'megillah sheisedon levana biyafia va'od." Now, here's what's interesting about the moon: the halavana mikabeles ora min hachama. So, remember again, the moon doesn't generate its own light. The moon only reflects the light of the sun. The Esther nami kibla shefa yofia. Misara bas gila, shahaisa dome lechama, ulakachivik. So says the Torah Chaim in a bit of an esoteric level. So the beauty of Hadassah, the beauty of Esther, came from who? It came from Sara Imenu. It came from Sara Imenu, the matriarch Sarah. So Esther's beauty was a reflection of Sarah's beauty. So says the Torah Chaim, the people just called her moon because the moon is beautiful. But on a deeper level, when they were calling her the moon, what they understood was that a beauty like Esther's comes from somewhere deep. You know, there are different kinds of beauty. There's superficial beauty. There's skin-deep beauty. And then there is profound beauty. Deep beauty. Now, that deep beauty could also be external. But it's not just a thin veneer of beauty. It's a beauty that transcends the individual in their entirety. Says the Taras Chaim, when people saw Esther, what they understood was there's something special about this woman. There's something unique about her. She's like the moon, that just like the moon reflects the light of the sun, so to this woman's beauty, which is a deep and profound beauty, doesn't just come from her. She must be reflecting the beauty of her ancestors. She must be reflecting the beauty of other great people. She must be reflecting beauty that proceeded from her. But there's another interesting thing about the moon, which is what? That the moon waxes and wanes, right? The moon is not constant and consistent. It has different levels of quality at different times. So just follow the train of thought here for just a moment. Right, so now the Gemara tells us we don't know what Esther's real name is, which is really quite fascinating. Right, the heroine of the story, and yet we can't agree on what her actual name is. But if we go with the second approach, her given name is Hadassah, and Esther is because Esther means the moon. Why was she called the moon? Reflective of her beauty. The moon is beautiful, she's beautiful. Taras Chaim, it's not just that the moon is beautiful. The moon reflects the light of even a stronger luminary. Esther reflected the beauty of Sari Imenu. But as we just said, there's something dramatic about the moon as well, that the moon waxes and wanes, right? The moon has a different kind of quality. Sometimes it's hidden and obscured, and sometimes it's visible, right? You ever notice, you can even notice this, like meteorological or astronomical reasons for this, but you know, it's amazing sometimes, even on the same night, the moon sometimes will look incredibly close and right in front of you, and just a little while later, it's so far away. It's still the same full moon, but its luminescence could change literally again from moment to moment. We of course know that the moon's luminescence changes over the course of the month, but at the end of the day, even on a given night, it could change. So watch this. Take a look at number 17. The Shulchan Aruch writes, "Umashinagu lilbosh pirtzufim bepurim." We have a custom to wear masks on Purim. "Vegever lovesh simlas isha, veisha kli gever." And a man could wear woman's clothing, and a woman could wear man's clothing. Now understand, that's a pretty dramatic thing, because during the rest of the year, that is an Isra Daraisa, that is a biblical prohibition. Yet the Shulchan Aruch says, the Ramah saying that on Purim, people wear masks, they wear costumes, and if you want to cross-dress, you could cross-dress. Ein Isser Bedavar, there's no Isser. Me'achar she'ein mechavnin ela l'simcha ba'alma. Because people's intention, remember, in general, the biblical prohibition on cross-dressing is because people historically would do this for immoral purposes. So therefore, the Torah says you have to stay away from all things that are potentially immoral. But on Purim, the intention is not immorality, but rather, again, the intention is simcha, the intention is joy. Now, this halacha is very strange. Well, it's very Purim, I mentioned this morning as well. Purim in general is a very strange yom tiv, because Purim is a yom tiv of excess, right? There's excess in food, there's excess in drink, there's excess in this whole costume thing. It seems totally not Jewish. Totally not Jewish. But I'll tell you what's fascinating. Where does the concept, right? Where do you find the concept ultimately again of costumes and cross-dressing in the Megillah? The answer is, you don't. Right? You don't. Mordechai dressing up in the horse, of course, but everybody knows it's Mordechai. Right? Do Mordechai, Yehudi, Yosef, Shushan be right? It's Mordechai. Everyone knows it's Mordechai. It's fascinating. Again, this is not a topic, also because we're ending in 2 minutes, but it's a fascinating halachic discussion. Where did this dressing up thing come from? Right? We assume now that like on Purim, what do you have on Purim? You have Megillah, Shalach Manis, Matanas Lev Yonim, and what's your theme? Right? Because everything has to match the theme, right? The Shalach Manas have to reflect the costumes, and the costumes have to reflect the curtains, and the curtains, everything has to tie in together, which is ridiculous. I just have to test for 30 seconds. If you didn't yet plan your Shalach Manas theme, I would strongly urge you, don't waste your time on a Shalach Manas theme, and don't waste your time on grand Mishloach Manos. Keep it simple. Keep it simple. Because the truth is, you know what ends up happening with 85% of Shalach Manas? I'm going to say it, even though it comes across. Do you know, like, the community of cleaning women, right, on the morning after Purim are so happy, right? So I think, like, the cavity rate in the immigrant community goes up so dramatically on the day after Purim. On the day after Purim. Because the truth is, people give away so much stuff. People give away so much stuff. So it's okay. Your friends know that you love them. You don't have to get them a whole fancy thing. Fulfill the mitzvah. Spend your money on matanos le'evyonim. And spend your time doing more important things. Whatever that is. Spending more time with your children. Spending more time with your friends. Spending more time with your spouse. Spending more time davening. Spending more time learning. But again, back to our regularly scheduled program. So again, so now, where do we find dressing up? So the answer is, we don't really find dressing up in the Megillah. We don't find this concept of costumes in the Megillah. In fact, if you take a look very, very quickly, if you take a look at the Shalos HaTshuvos Ma'ariv Mincha in number 18, see, he writes over here, he was asked this particular question, Al Devar Levishas HaPertzufim Shenoagim Lilbosh Bachurim Vegam Besulos Kim Na'arim Beporim. See, it's actually interesting. He says that people are dressing up and you can't recognize who they are or what they are. Where did this come from? So he goes through a whole halachic piece, but he says at the end of the day, since the intention of dressing up and cross-dressing is not for immoral purposes, therefore it's okay. It is clearly a custom that started sometime after Purim. It's not in the Megillah, and it was not part of the original observance of Purim. When exactly it started, I don't know. But again, says the Shas Shus Ma'ariv Mincha, it's okay because people have holy intentions for it. Take a look at number 19. In the Sefer Chagei Yisrael, he says something absolutely amazing. Now here, he goes off the rails against dressing up on Purim. I'm not like the Grinch who stole Purim. I want to be clear on that. Right? I want to just show you a line that he has over here. Kam b'sefer Ololos Ephraim Mamar Shintes Kosev Neged Minagzeh. He quotes the Ololos Ephraim, who is from the Kli Yochar, who says, don't dress up on Purim. The Kli Yochar was vehemently against this particular practice. Why? V'yeshno estama mar'eim. Excuse me. V'yeshano estama mar'eim. Loseis apneim masveh. At shener pach li'ishacher. Ve'in lo makir. People dress up. They put on masks. And no one could recognize them. Now there's a danger to anonymity. What's the danger to anonymity? People may be much more prone to do certain things when they're not recognized and they are anonymous, versus when they could be identified and seen.
There
are groups of people, and no one knows who's who. No one knows who's a man. No one knows who's a woman. And the Kli Yochar says it's just asking for trouble. It's asking for bad things. So the Kli Yochar goes on saying terrible practice. Okay, we know the Minhag Yisrael is, we dress up. But what I just want to draw your attention to is one line. Go back up for just a moment. And with this, we'll bring everything together. If you look at what the Kli Yochar writes. So again, I'm beginning on the number 19, the second line, the last two words on the line. V'yishanu es ta'amam umar'ehem laseis alpneihem masveh. What happens ultimately again when you put a mask on or when you put a costume on? Ad shenepach li'ish acher. You have the capacity to become someone else. Ve'ein lo makir, to the point that other people may not even recognize you. The power of dressing up is that you become someone else to the point that others can't even recognize you. And perhaps that's the pshat in the pasuk. Let's go all the way back. What does Mordechai tell us? Remember again, why? How do we start the shir tonight? Mordechai says to Esther, lo higida Esther es ama. So we translate it, Esther doesn't divulge her identity. But perhaps on a more pneumistic level, on a more spiritual or internal level, what does it mean? Esther lohigida es ama ve'es moladeta means Esther was unable to articulate who she really was. Esther thought that she was just an ordinary person. Esther thought that she was just another regular individual. Esther thought that her life was going to follow a very simple trajectory. She'll grow up, she'll get married, marry some of her family, so on and so forth. Esther never thought that she was destined for greatness. Esther never thought that she was destined for some type of being the architect of salvation. Esther lo higida es amo ve'es moladeta doesn't just mean simply Esther didn't divulge her identity. It means Esther was unable to articulate who she really was because she didn't really yet know the true heroine who resided inside. But it wasn't just her. Ki Mordechai tziva aleha asher lo sagid. Mordechai tells her not to reveal who she is because Mordechai doesn't know yet who he is as well. You know, the great story of the Megillah is that the hero and the heroine of the story, at the beginning of the story, have absolutely no idea who they really are. Esther thinks that she's just a regular young girl, Nebuch, conscripted into a life not of her own choosing. And Mordechai, remember again, Mordechai was significantly older and was already established. He knows who he was. But Mordechai probably felt that his glory days were over. Remember again, he was of prominence when the Beis HaMikdash stood, when the Jews were in Eretz Yisrael, but now they were in diaspora, new age, new dawn. So Esther cannot articulate who she really is or what she really is. And Mordechai can't articulate it either. But each of them discover their incredible potential over the course of the Megillah. Mordechai discovers it a little bit earlier on, when Haman rises to power, right? And everyone bows down in front of Haman. And what does the pasuk say? O Mordechai lo yichra v'lo yishtachave. Mordechai would not bow down. He wouldn't. Why wouldn't Mordechai bow down? You know, Mordechai caught a lot of flack for not bowing down. Why didn't Mordechai bow down? Because Mordechai understood that he was the voice of truth, that he was the voice of good, that he was the voice of light. And if everyone capitulates, and if everyone bows towards evil, then good simply ceases to exist. All of his fellow rabbinic leaders were all bowing down. Mordechai was the only one not to bow down. And in that moment, Mordechai realized, I have the capacity to shape destiny. I have the ability to make something of myself and to make something of my life. I am not anonymous. I am not regular. I have potential. I have a destiny. I can shape my circumstances. Esther discovers it a little bit later. Remember again, Esther Hamalka is quite a woman. Remember, she goes into Achash. First thing she does, which was dramatic, is she goes uninvited to the king. The amount of courage that took, realizing that if her calculations were off, then at the end of the day, that would have cost her her life. But yet, she still went forward with it. But that's not only that. What does she do? She invites the king and Haman to a party. And what doesn't she do? What doesn't she do?
She doesn't say why.
What gumption, right? What strength, right? It's almost like a little bit of arrogance if you think about it. You're going to invite the king to a party with Haman, with one other person, and you're not going to say why. So it's not arrogance, it's confidence. In that moment, that young girl became a woman. In that moment, that girl who started out in this story as helpless and defenseless begins to take the reins of her life, begins to take the reins of her destiny, and recognizes that she has the power to be a heroine. The meaning of that pasuk at the beginning of the Megillah is teaching us about the progression of the Purim story. Yes, in addition to all the things that we said, Esther didn't know who she was. She begins the Purim story thinking that she's ordinary, thinking that she's regular. She doesn't know that she reflects the beauty of Sarah. She doesn't know that she has monarchy of her alter Zayd of Shol coursing through her veins. She doesn't know that she has the trappings and makings of a heroine. And it's not just her. Even Mordechai was significantly older than her, also thinks, just a regular guy. I'm just a regular guy trying to navigate my way through life, this brand new scary world in the Persian Median Empire. Don't rock the boat. Esther, I'll kidnap you. We'll get out of here as quickly as we can. You understand how this happens? Mordechai's plan at the beginning of the Megillah was what? To run away. What's the one thing a leader never does? Run away. Mordechai starts the story with a plan to run away. And by the end of the story, he is one of the architects of salvation. Do you know why we wear masks? Says the Kli Yakar. Now the Kli Yakar doesn't like it. But at the end of the day, what he doesn't realize is in his effort to go ahead and convince us not to engage in this practice, he puts forward a very compelling reason to do so. This is because what happens when you go ahead and you put on your costume? You become someone else. You know, in our family, we always take family pictures on Purim. Because if you ever take pictures on Purim, you know, if you look at them after the alcohol wears off, right? And you look at them, and what's the first thought that goes through your mind? I can't believe I wore that, right? I can't believe I actually did that. Why? Because costumes have a way of dramatically altering your identity. You look like the Kliyakar said, Nepach li'ish acher. It turns me into someone else. Someone who ultimately, again, no one else recognizes. No one else recognizes. And perhaps that is the very essence of why, in fact, we do dress up on Purim. The goal is to show ourselves, I can become someone totally different if I want to. If I want to transform myself, if I want to remake myself, if I want to reforge or recast my identity. Sometimes in life, we think that we are set in our ways. Let me say it differently. Sometimes in life, we are set in our ways. But we think that because we are set in our ways, we cannot unset ourselves. And that is fundamentally false. Change is always possible. Cathartic change is the greatest gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us. And the entire essence of Purim, the entire essence of the Megillah is the story of two people who thought they were ordinary. And then what happens? What do Mordechai and Esther both do? The one thing they have in common in the story, what do they both do? They both dress up. They both dress up, right? As I've mentioned before, Mordechai donned the clothing of the king. Esther dresses up. She's now the queen. They change their clothing and they become unrecognizable. Esther is unrecognizable. The little timid Jewish girl is unrecognizable now as the most powerful woman in the Persian Median Empire. Mordechai puts on the king's clothing, rides on the king's horse, and he's gone from the debased Jew to the trusted advisor of the king. And herein lies the entire Purim story. The metamorphosis of Mordechai and Esther in the Megillah, going from people who could not articulate their greatness to becoming the hero and heroine of a story, is our story of Purim. Do you want to know what Purim is all about? Purim is asking yourself, what kind of costume do you want to put on? Sometimes you have to take off the costume you're already wearing, but what kind of costume? But the most important costume you wear in Purim is not the ballerina or the cowboy or the UPS guy, right? The most important costume you put on Purim is the costume of the person you want to be. That is the most important costume you choose on Purim. On Purim, I choose that I am going to look like this. Now, my actual physical costume may look a little bit different, but my spiritual costume is the costume of the person I want to look like, the person I truly want to be. This is the essence of Mordechai and Esther, and this is the essence of Purim, the essence of the Megillah. So give us all the bracha that over the course of the Yom Tov of Purim, we're busy with a lot of stuff. As I mentioned before, it's a very frenetic Yom Tov. People going and coming and Shalach Manas and all the different mitzvos, beautiful mitzvos of the day. And a lot of times, the one thing we don't have time for on Purim is thought. Is to sit down and be alone with ourselves. So maybe it requires us to wake up a little bit earlier, or maybe to just somehow lock myself in a room for just a couple of moments by myself, and to ask myself a simple question. My avodah on Purim is to undergo the metamorphosis of Mordechai and Esther. To start out thinking you're regular and mediocre, but then ultimately to decide to put on a brand new costume of life. A brand new identity. Who do you want to be? And when I say brand new identity, I don't chas v'shalom mean it to say that a person has to change. We all have many, many, many wonderful attributes and positive things about ourselves. But we could all be better. And we could all be holier. And there are things that we know we want to do, things that we know we want to accomplish, that we wanted to do and accomplish for many, many years. Purim is the time to decide, what costume are you putting on this year? Who do you really want to be? What is your destiny? What do you want to accomplish? What do you want to be when you grow up? Purim is the time, Purim is the day, where we stop thinking that we are regular. We stop with the inability to articulate our greatness. We choose the costume, the image of who we want to become in life. and we spend the days ahead, because choosing the costume is only the first part. It's an important step, but it's only the first. After we choose the costume, we, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, spend the days ahead creating the lifestyle to accompany and to properly reflect that new costume we have chosen for ourselves. And in the hope of this, if we really experience Purim in the way that Mordechai and Esther experienced Purim, to transition from mediocrity into destiny-driven people, then the same way that the Jews of Shushan, Vayir Shushan Salah v'Samecha, there was rejoicing, there was happiness, there was salvation in Purim, in Yirtzeh Hashem, we will experience the same, both in our individual and national lives. M'hira Rabbi Aminu. Amen.
Good to see you, Rabbi.